Pete, for my first question for you is talk a bit about the Megatropolis album. I remember when it came out, I wasn't a big fan of this record, but at the same time, when you put this new version of it out, it's absolutely amazing, and it's remixed, and we redid a bunch of stuff. And talk about this. Talk about re-recording this album.
Well, actually, it's the same with me. As you know, I mean, that's the reason why I did it. I wasn't happy with Megatropolis at all for a long time. And getting the ability now to fix this stuff, I really dig into it quite a bit. And I must say, I'm still really, really thrilled with the outcome. Really, the word thrilled describes it best. Because it turned into a complete new album for me, you know. I really love this album now. It kicks ass, which it didn't do before.
Well, and the thing is, you did the track listing's a little bit different on this album. I've noticed when I went back and listened to both records that this new one, like I said before, is just night and day. I mean, when you go and listen, when I listen to the old one again, it pales in comparison to, say, the new version of this Megatropolis album. And, you know, when I first received Megatropolis 2.0, I was completely blown away, thinking to myself that I really overlooked this album over the years. And, you know, I went back, listened to the original version, and, you know, the original one just kind of lacked a lot of the stuff, a lot of the great stuff that you seem to have added.
Well, I mean, it's. I think the major point with this album was that it was lacking quite a bit of all the Iron Savior trademarks, such as harmony vocals and stuff like that. You know, I left that out on purpose to make this album to move Iron Savior a bit more away from my other band I had at this time, Savage Circus, and I was focusing more on the rock aspect than on the metal aspect. Which I thought was a good idea at the time, and but not nowadays. And so, I mean, I recorded a lot of backing vocals to bring that in, of course. Then, of course, time has moved on a bit, so my studio equipment is tremendously better now. I have more possibilities. That's why the new mix definitely sounds more... Yeah, more like what you are about to listen today. You know, it sounds more up to date and gives the whole thing a bit more punch. And I think changing the running order really did a good job as well, because Running Riot is not a bad song, but at the time we did the album, for me it was the best song, and with all these having this rock aspect in mind a bit more. But I think Omega Man is the perfect opener for this album. And if you start the album with such a strong track, you have a totally different approach to what comes after. And I think this is one major key thing which converts the album into, an Iron Savior album that plays now in the league of all other albums.
Well, I was completely blown away by this record for a few reasons. You know, number one, when I first listened to it, it almost felt like a new album to me, because I didn't really remember the previous Megatropolis album because of the fact that I didn't care for it at first when it had actually come out. And now, listening to this new version and listening to what you have coming out now, it's, you know, the track listing, I really think this is great, and it's almost like a new album now.
Well, I mean, I also did record re-record some lead vocals, especially Omega Man, because I wasn't happy with the way of the performance. And so it's of course all those things I pointed out, but it's in the end, it's not one reason why Megatropolis didn't kick at the time. It was adding up quite a bit, you know. It was the lack of the backing vocals. The mix wasn't that well. The songwriting was good. Vocal performance here and there was kind of lacking, and so now all these things are in place now, and surprise, the songwriting was good.
Well, let's talk a bit about, at the same time, you put a live album out, and a live album / DVD that just came out, and I really think that you played some of the better songs off of some of your albums, especially when it comes to The Landing, and because you have Are You Ready and Heavy Metal Never Dies and Starlight and a lot of these really great songs off of that record, which, in my opinion, that The Landing album really kind of resurrected the band a bit. And, you know, talk a bit about making this DVD and a double live CD, because, you know, if I recall, these are the first live recordings you've had since the Interlude EP way back, man, way back like 15, 16 years ago now.
Yeah, actually, I mean, that's right. Having these tracks on the Interlude was more of, it was more a coincidence. When we played that show at Wacken, afterwards we got noticed that they have been recording this, and so yeah, we did it. But it wasn't planned like this. This thing was really planned for quite a long time. We put together a perfect team to establish the recording, all the setup and stuff, you know, and also all the video stuff. We had a great video guy who really put a lot of work into that stuff. Definitely more work than what we paid him for. And I think also Jan Ruber, who was the recording engineer, did a great job. And yes, and we had a great evening. I mean, I must say, I really swear to God, there are no major fixes in it. There are a couple of two or three parts where I was singing the wrong lyrics that was repaired. But most of the stuff is just, as I said, we had a good night. We don't play that well all the time, but we do play well because we're old now and we know what we're doing. But I don't know, maybe it was the adrenaline or knowing that this is going to be put on tape forever. And so I'm really, really, really happy with the DVD as well, I must say. I love it.
Well, now that you have this live album out of the way and you have this redone version of Megatropolis out of the way, you know, in my opinion, I think that the last couple albums, Rise of the Hero and The Landing, have been very, very good. And do you have plans on writing an album? And have you started working on the next studio album?
Yes, of course. You catch me right in the middle of songwriting. I was just about putting down a new killer riff, of course. And I don't know if I don't have any title yet for the new album, but it's supposed to come out next year, first quarter of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
If everything went well, and if the gods of metal are still providing me with useful ideas.
Well, they've been providing you with ideas for the last few years, because the last couple of studio albums are great. And, you know, the vibe of the band, to me, is just absolutely amazing. And it almost get those, you know, when I end up listening to the last couple studio albums, I get that same feeling that I had when I was listening to the debut in Unification.
I think what happened to the band is that after this break of 4 years after Megatropolis, and with this comeback of The Landing, I think the whole chemistry of the band grew even more together than it has ever been before. And I think that is one major point why Iron Savior is so much Iron Savior. I think even more Iron Savior than ever before. I think we really found our style by now. And we really exactly know what we want to do and what we don't want to do. Speaking of myself, it was a good thing for me to do those two Savage Circus albums, to be honest, because now, for me, it's my personal proof, hey, I can do progressive metal like hell if I want to, but I don't have to. So I can put in a little bit of that stuff into Iron Savior here and there, but focus, well, on just creating pure metal without feeling, oh, it does not show my abilities too much, you know. I think that's one thing that definitely changed, personally for me, and also in approaching how to write an Iron Savior song.
One of the things that I thought you guys have always done a great job are on cover songs. And, you know, one song I'm going to bring up right now is you did an amazing job on a cover of Black Sabbath's Neon Nights on the Unification album as a bonus track. And I always thought you guys did great job. I did a great job at doing covers as well. And I noticed you did that Breaking the Law track at the end of the live album as well.
Yeah, I love that too. It's a great version. I'm also still really proud on that. Well, actually, Breaking the Law, it's something that we that we do live all the time. This is how we close our sets. It's a habit, you know, that we do over the years now. And actually, it was never planned to do a Breaking the Law cover on any record or so. But now, when it came to recording a live show, this couldn't be left out. It's something that we do all the time, so we do it on the DVD as well.
I always remember your cover of Neon Nights too. Always remember the Judas Priest cover, because, you know, obviously Breaking the Law being a Priest song. I always remember the song Desert Plains too, and it was just kind of cool to listen to you guys do this song at the end of your set.
And it's definitely, I mean, it's one of the most classic metal songs ever, I must say. And I really like the way when the people, I mean, of course, if you saw a show of us, then you know what's happening at the end of Atlantis Falling. But I really like the way Breaking the Law starts out of this end drone of Atlantis Falling, when people think, oh, the show's over. And it's amazing how people freak out if they hear the first riff of Breaking the Law. It's insane. It works all the time.
Well, you've been with AFM Records for quite some time now, and, you know, record sales and the whole business end of the record industry has changed dramatically, where you're not really selling as many albums. But, you know, what I have noticed now is a rise in attendance at shows. And have you experienced this? Have you seen a big rise in attendance at a lot of the shows that you're playing?
Well, it's the same with us. We definitely have more people when we play than it was like 10 years ago. 10 years ago, touring wasn't very easy, or playing or performing in general, because, if you're not one of the big boys, then, difficult. But, that's definitely better. But I must say that's, of course, selling records. Well, I mean, with Iron Savior, we never sold as much as others. But what I really like about this is that since the landing, the sales are constantly going up. And there's still headroom for us for selling more records.
Now, do you find, here's the thing I find it's interesting. So you're selling less records, at least, you know, most bands are selling less albums. But I've also noticed that I see a younger generation of people attending shows. And have you noticed that? Because I know, like, when I go to a metal show, I see a lot of 16, 17-year-old kids now, and you didn't see that about 8 or 9 years ago. And are you experiencing that as well at some of the shows you're playing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a good mixture of young people, of course also the old dudes like ourselves. But and that's something that I find really positive, that there is like 15, 16-year-old people standing in front of the stage and banging to Iron Savior stuff, which is amazing, I must say. And coming back to metal fans in general, I mean, if you really are a fan of an act or of any band, then when you go to a show, you don't get a ripped CD from the internet sign. You have to have the original. And if you started a collection, then you, of course, you want to have the new album. And then it's just not enough, you know, to have a copy of it. You just download it from the internet. No, you have to have the real thing. It's a little bit like if you think back when we were young, it's like having an album on vinyl or just on tape, you know, the stuff that was kind of okay, it was okay to record on tape, but if you really liked something, especially, that's what I did at least, then of course I bought the record, I copied it on tape, and if I really liked it, I had to have the record as well, you know, the vinyl, the real thing. And I think that's the same thing with the CDs at the time. And speaking of CDs downloading from the internet, I know a lot of people who are downloading it because it's a convenient way to get it and to purchase it legally. That also is a fact that people really don't want to get criminal. They really want to legally download stuff. But a lot of downloads also, you know, they offer these digital booklets and stuff like that, which you could actually print out and do your own stuff. And if you know a little bit what you're doing, or if you're a little bit experienced in it, it really comes really close to the original.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's not quite. It's kind of like, you know, I always viewed as...
No, it's not the same. No, it's not the same than going into a store and buying a physical copy, of course. It's not the same. But on the other hand, I mean, time is moving on, and there are fans who don't have a physical CD collection. They have all their stuff on their computer or on their MP3 players, and that's enough for them. If you look at the sales, I think 10 years ago it was like less than 10%. You would distribute digitally. That changed quite a bit. Actually, it's close to 40% by the time.
Well, I've always viewed MP3s as the modern day version of the cassette. You know, not quite the quality of the CD, but there is still some quality there to listen to a record. And, you know, usually when you listen to them, I go out and buy the album. I mean, that's pretty much, you know, what I've always done over the years. And, you know, obviously a CD is, you know, kind of what vinyl was back in the day. You know, vinyl was better than cassette. So that's kind of the analogy I always think of when I think of an MP3.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, a CD is a CD. You know what you get. I mean, it's a 44.1K kilohertz thing with it's the standard. I mean, it's the industry standard for listening to music. So, what more to say? I mean, to be honest, but a good MP3, I also must say, if in iTunes quality, like with the 320, I hardly hear any difference, I must admit.
Yeah.
Unless you have, you have ears like a bat, which I don't have, then you really don't hear any difference.
I've also noticed when it comes to physical copies, most labels put out a special edition of an album, and that special edition has some extra bonus tracks and some extra stuff, you know, going along with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one reason why everybody and all labels really want a bonus track, you know. To be honest, for me, it's just business. You have to have a regular version in order to make the limited edition, which of course is the one that sells most, is kind of like interesting or has actually a right to exist. That's basically all. And a limited edition, well, it implies that it's something special and that it's a must-have for a collector. Or if you buy the limited edition, you get more value for your money or whatever. So I think for me, for my taste, I don't need this, to be honest, me personally, because if an album is cool, then it's cool and I don't need, different versions of it. But that's just me speaking as an artist, but I know that record companies like AFM or basically all others, they really like to have this limited edition stuff to make the product more interesting, you know, and so that a limited edition can exist, there has to be a non-limited edition with one track less. That's basically all.
Kind of like the old school, you know, kind of like the Japanese bonus track. People buy the Japanese album to get that track.
I mean, it's a different thing than what we did. If you really put in something that has extra value, you know, like guitar picks or whatever, or just look at the Condition Red cover, which is in the studio here. What we did with the Condition Red in Germany at the time was kind of cool as well. I think we put in free concert tickets, so that is something that really is a value, which really is in a way worth to be part of a limited edition, but. Just a limited edition track. I don't know. Lame, to be honest.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, when I think of the song "Heavy Metal Never Dies," and you know, this is one of my favorite songs you've ever written. You know, it's almost like this music really unites people. I mean, I could go to another country, deal with someone from a different culture, and if they're wearing a shirt from their favorite band, it's like we instantly know each other and have something in common. And it's something that's very, very cool. And it's, you know, over the years, even though people have tried to kill this type of music, it's just become stronger and stronger as the years have gone on.
Well, I mean, yes, of course. I mean, it's exactly the way you just described it. I mean, metal is something that that connects people worldwide. I mean, even if you don't speak the same language, you listen to the same kind of music. You have and because music is, at least for me, and I think for many other people as well, a big part of your life. If you have a match there, then of course, I mean, somebody who listens to metal, in a way, is without knowing the person, the more sympathetic person to me than somebody who does not. Mm-hmm. It's a natural thing, and I think because this music is around for such a long time, it definitely goes also through the generations, you know, and it's like one big thing that really somehow connects everybody who is who's into metal. And actually, I think it's also a great feeling to be part of this let's call it worldwide community. I like it, I must say. I feel well with this global company we all have.
Well, you know what I noticed too? I have some listeners and stuff that are from like the Middle East and all these other countries you wouldn't think would listen to this music, and it's almost like this music just pretty much unites people.
Yeah, totally agree on that. I mean, and you just named Heavy Metal Never Dies. I mean, we can play this song in every country. And even if they don't understand what's going on when we play the song, the moment this line comes up and I sing Heavy Metal Never Dies, everybody knows what's going on and everybody is, is feeling this connection. I think this is one reason why this song is working so well. I mean, it's a hymn, you know. It's a hymn that everybody likes. The gods of heavy metal blessed me when I wrote this song. No, just kidding. But actually, I'm actually really proud of having done this particular song. I think it's nothing more to say. I'm proud of this one.
Well, the guitar solo too, in my opinion, is probably one of the best solos I think I've ever heard you play.
Also, the guitar solo, I'm really into that as well. I don't know. I mean, I just had a great moment when I was coming up with this song. Actually, it was done very fast. It took me less than a day to put it together.
Yeah.
Songwriting.
Well, Heavy Metal Never Dies is also a track that... it was that song that I always kept repeating on the album, and the solo grabbed me so much, and it had that big of an impact on me, and it had a huge impact on me. That's why I brought the song up. I bring the song up a lot, actually.
Well, actually, I think that's one of the songs that if you listen for it for like crazy for some time. But you never get over with it, you know. It's not like that you overhear it or that you have just too much of this song. It's always the same. You don't listen to it that much, and it keeps fading away a little bit. But every time you keep listening to this song again, it brings back this memory or this feeling you had when you were really enjoying this song, and you see yourself sitting there with a big smile on your face. I mean, that's always the same. I do listen to the song occasionally here and there, of course, maybe just like that. And the moment I hear this first riff, I have exactly this smile on my face.
Well, I have to ask, have you had any offers aside from Prog Power in playing some shows over here or even doing any type of touring over here in the U.S.?
No, actually, yeah, I mean, I think the only occasion we had was playing the Prog Power Festival. Combined with a show we did in New York, I think that was in 2008. But no, unfortunately, not so far. Because you know, the basic reason is the main reason is that flying four people to United States is expensive.
Yeah,
and so I mean, a show I think it's definitely on my list. To put it like this, it's definitely on my list, and I would be really glad to play at least a couple of shows in the States as long as I'm alive and able to do it. It's on my list, believe me, but it's kind of hard to realize, I must also say.
Well, I don't think a lot of people realize how hard it is. I mean, you got to get a work visa and you got to go through all this paperwork and all this craziness just to even come over here to play one show.
Exactly. I mean, it's not it's not only the paperwork. Of course, the paperwork is a bit as well, but the paperwork you can handle that. It's I think it's more finding the right person who is willing to. Well, I mean, it's kind of like a risk, you know, because I don't want to forward money for four flights in the hope to get it recouped by selling tickets at the door, you know. Mm-hmm. That is something that's not happening. So we need somebody who would guarantee that he at least cover the flights and transportation, hotel rooms and stuff like that. And, I mean, as I just said, for four people, that's quite a bit of money we're talking about. And if you're not so sure that you're going to recoup this money,
Not to mention you gotta pay a road crew, and I don't think a lot of people realize the cost involved to even come over here.
Exactly. So, so for just one show, that is only possible. If you play a festival or so, then it might be possible to have a band like Iron Savior, because maybe the promoter of the festival says, hey, okay, we want a cool European act, and they need some money as well, and we have to pay for the flights. And in the package of the whole festival, it makes the festival more interesting or whatever. And he says, okay, we do that. The thing is that that also you have to have the right booking agent and stuff like that. And so the states are, I mean, even though we're living in a globalized world, I mean, the states are still far away from Europe. Mm-hmm. So if you, the bookers here, they really don't work on United States touring. They book shows for Europe or Germany, you know. And those who are doing to book internationally, a band like Iron Savior is actually not big enough.
Well, I one question I want to ask you too before I get to my last question is, you write a lot about sci-fi stuff, and is this a theme you like to stay with? And you know, have you ever thought about straying away and maybe writing about some other things here and there? Which I know sometimes you do, but it seems like sci-fi seems to be the big thing for you.
Well, I mean, it's science fiction. Definitely, is one of my. I really love science fiction. Ever since, I mean, I was growing up watching Star Trek on TV, and it was so cool, you know. And to be honest, if I would live in the 22nd or 23rd century, Starfleet would exactly be what I was doing. So therefore, I always had this big like for science fiction. I was reading a lot of books, watching all. I mean, I watched basically everything, you know. And so when it came to doing this Iron Savior thing, I thought it was actually a cool idea to have this band not only in a certain musical direction. I thought it's a good idea to give it something more like an image or a world, you know, that you could imagine along with it. And it was science fiction, because there weren't too many bands out there at the time who were doing science fiction lyrics. And actually, I thought it would be a cool combination, which I still think. I think it still works. But over the years, there's a little bit more than just science fiction. I mean, I become older, I become more wise, I have more life experience and stuff like that. And in the beginning, it was a good thing for me to come up with lyrics, to have ideas and to fill the words for a song, you know. But at the time, now I still like science fiction and I still like to do science fiction lyrics. But I think it started out pretty much on the Battering Ram album. I just realized that there's a non-science fiction world also existing, and which is worth to be talked about here and there a little bit. Speaking with the one final thing, even though those science fiction lyrics, or any lyric I write, it may not appear to you directly, but there's a lot of personal stuff in all of my lyrics, even though the ones that don't look like it. But I have a lot of thoughts going on in my tiny little mind when I write lyrics, and I really try to write lyrics as best as possible with, you know, not just like a mixture of cool sounding words. I need to have a real meaning behind the cool sounding words are great, but I have to have a meaning, otherwise I cannot perform it. If I just sing something that sounds cool but has no meaning to me, then I cannot interpret it. So that's why I really work hard on my lyrics to give them a useful meaning, which I can then sing.
Well, you sound like me when I songwrite, and I'll admit to you right now, I still watch Star Trek, so.
Yeah, me too. I love it.
Pete, it's great to have you on the show yet again, and do you have any last words for any of the listeners to the radio show that are going to be checking out this interview?
Well, I mean, that's what can I say? I mean, I'm really thankful to all the fans, to all the fans out there who have been supporting Iron Savior for such a long time by now. And one of the reasons, or actually the main reason why we're still there, is you, the fans out there. So a big thank you from all of us for your ongoing support. And yeah, I hope that we will not disappoint you with the new album that comes out next year. We're working really hard on it at the moment, and well, all I can say is that I have a couple of great songs already put together, and it's pretty much Iron Savior like.
Awesome.
And yeah, I hope that that you all gonna enjoy it and keep on supporting us. And again, a big thank you.